what the alcoholic really meant by not putting the wool over my eyes was that he knew that he always tried to pull wool over people's eyes.
Mm.
And quite experienced social workers and psychiatrists. Mm. Seems to me only too willing. It's gone off, it's going up and down, that bed. See, is that all right?
That's right, that shows it's working nicely.
Oh, I suppose it really comes down to that we all believe what we want to believe.
Mm.
And it's very difficult for really to come to terms with the fact that this is the sort of life this chap leads.
Mm.
And when he says, well, I only have a few drinks here and there, and you quite seriously say, well, you have a drink when you wake up in the morning, you have another drink at breakfast time, and you have some more drinks during the morning, and you have some more at lunch. Mm. In other words, you show him that you mm. know what you're talking about. But unless you're prepared to do that,
mm.
or able to do it, probably a better word, then you are getting the wool pulled over your eyes, mm. because you're calling his bluff, in other words.
Mm. Mm.
Well, that must be just as true in the world of delinquency, I suppose, well, imagine, anyway.
Yes.
What probation officers tell me. And I think it comes back to what we were saying earlier about knowing what you're doing
mm.
and why you're doing it.
Mm.
Now you did ask me about how I got to LSE, one and the other.
Mm.
When Mary Lane, who you didn't know, but she had Margaret Eden's job. Margaret Eden took her job at Maudsley. And when Mary retired, unbeknown to me, she and Audley Lewis had made up their mind I would take her place.
Yeah.
Well, it so happened that things went wrong with Elizabeth Howard and the Institute, and she was leaving more about the same time. She was in charge of the teaching. That's what I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Administration never appealed to me, and never has done. I can't be bothered with it. In fact, I used to say the staff were more nuisance to me than it, than Clive, even when I was in charge as a nurse.
Yes.
I found the staff far more nuisance than patients.
Yes.
So I then took Elizabeth's job, as well as my own work as well. I was responsible for the organisation of the the practical training at Maudsley for some years.
Mm.
And that plus various things I'd written.
Mm.
And I must say something, it mustn't go on tape. Can I do that?
Mm. Yeah.
So when there was a vacancy at LSE, and by this time I was getting restless, I wanted to leave the Maudsley.
Yes.
What with students, I wasn't getting younger either, my own work, and also more and more I seemed to spend time with the registrars.
Yes.
And less time. In fact, I seemed to have no clients at all when I'd gone to conference. I was always going to conferences and ward rounds and all the rest of it. And my life was becoming that. So I applied for the LSE job, and I hadn't any of the qualifications. But I discovered after Richard Titmuss hadn't either, so I wasn't alone in that. Anyway, I got appointed, and I was never happy at LSE. It seemed to me, apart from my immediate colleagues, it was a rarefied intellectual world, which didn't seem to have much to do with feeling.
Mm.
I think you know what I mean about that. Also, I felt the place was almost schizophrenic, in a queer sort of way. And when I thought about it afterwards, especially during the famous Hedim, I realised, of course, it has no campus. One doesn't think about it at the time.
Yes.
When I was a student there, when you're busy as a student, you don't think about these things. But I didn't anyway. Then I assumed, because of my long experience by that time of you know, practical work, as it was called, I vetted any possible new placement for students, and also visited the supervisors and the placements continuously, so there was a feeling. When I compare the care, and also, of course, we started, no, it was before I went to LSE, there were groups of supervisors used to meet as a group. There were two groups, one which read right chaired, one, I forget who chaired the other, probably Kay or somebody else, anyway. I remember being in Red Wright's, and Elizabeth Horne and I were in that group, and everybody still puzzles to say how either she or I heard each other.
Yes.
I never even ever heard Elizabeth Horne. Did you never meet her?
Yes, she was the senior PSM at Charles Training Center.
Yes, well, apparently, the dialogue that she and I indulged in, nobody else ever heard.
And she got a very high-pitched voice.
That's right. Well, anyway, when I went to LSE, I read Leffie went to this other job. So every fortnight, I used to have a group of supervisors, and the very experienced supervisors they were, too. When I compared that, the care in which placements were made, and one of the things that Kay always insisted was it was no good having any placement unless the consultant psychiatrist was willing to cooperate and teach. That was an essential.
Yes.
When I compare all that background with what I discovered when I was external examiner at one course of PSWs, and what happened after the proliferation of social workers and after the CBOM, when it soon became clear that all the top jobs were going to childcare officers, people who'd been childcare officers, certainly weren't going to PSWs. And when Alison Wood, who was, I think she may have been in your group about your time as a student, she went as training officer to the childcare department of the Royal Borough of Chelsea and Kendon, it was called, something like that. I was only called Kendon in those days for the Tory party made everything bigger and bigger. And she wanted me to have seminars with the childcare officers on the subject of social work and mental illness. And I soon discovered they never met as a group. They said quite openly this was the first time they'd come together. This was considered to be a very good childcare office. And they didn't have casework conferences and casework discussions. When I compared even places like the Moors all the way to Tavistock, people criticised it. I used to spend a good part of my time at conferences. And I realised at once whole critical faculties in the way of appeasement and so on. This was a kind of continual learning process. And that's what seems, it is all that background seems to me missing now in, as I understand it, in modern social work. What social workers I meet, I ask about case conference and they don't know what I'm talking about. And the standard of training in the mental health course in London, I can't think of anywhere where there's anything comparable or has been. Admittedly, I mean, London has the first call on most resources, and people are there, and there are resources there. But
what do you say to the argument, Edgar, that people who, the other point of view would be that it was more important to get rather than quality?
Well, this of course isn't only doesn't only apply to social work.
No.
And it's an argument, for instance, Ray Wright put forward to me on more than one occasion. we must have them. Well, I've never been convinced about this. I can see you can't do much work unless you've got bodies to do it. But I hold the view perhaps that one person who knows what he's doing and is well trained probably does far better work in the long run and is more useful to the community than three or four badly trained and poor workers. That's how I would see it.
Yes.
But on the other hand, administrators probably don't see it like this at all.
Yes.
And also social work now, where it never used in my day, certainly, it's a vested interest now. Which it wasn't then.
Yes.
Were talking about, some time ago, earlier, you were talking about, was it devoted people or?
Committed,
yes. I would say there was, it was vocational to some extent.
Yes.
It doesn't matter, it's a question of words.
Yes.
That, I don't meet that very often now. And when I think of the care that was made about the selection of students for the mental health course, of course we made mistakes, naturally. But a really great care was given to this, and I'm often, I remember one of the things I often would say to a student, well, why do you want to do social work? And I always hoped they'd say, well, I really feel I'd like to try and help people. But this was a dirty word, apparently, a dirty thing. You didn't say things like that, apparently. It was seen as being wanting to do good or something. Well, it seems to me rather sad that one thinks in these terms, that's how it was. I think what has happened, whether we look back, I'm thinking of social work in general now, whether we look back on the work the Institute of Armless, as it was then called, did, or the old mental health course. All right, we've got, as you said, we've got plenty of quantity now, but quality's got less and less. And I think the time will come, if it hasn't already, when people will say, the society will say, look, we spend all this money on social workers, what are we getting in return? Well, whatever faults and shortages there were in the past, at least there was real understanding, I think, between, for instance, teamwork in good child guidance clinics was really was first rate. And how this was shown very often, when we had sometimes we had probation officers trained, and experienced probation officers would come on the mental health course. And they had the devil of a job adjusting themselves to working in a team, because they, by the nature of their work and so on, they were individuals.
Yes.
And therefore, I remember that, what the devil was her name at the Maudsley? A woman I never very much liked, doesn't matter. She was there after I left, long after I left.
One of the PSWs.
Yes, she was a supervisor. But she wrote an interesting paper about work with them, which I quoted in one of my articles. Oh yes, in that last paper I read about what are we training PSWs for. Yes, her name is there.
Miss Bergman.
No, it wasn't Inga. No, it wasn't her.
Miss Malherd.
That's it, yes, it was her. And she made the point, which sometimes one tends to forget, that with a mental illness, more than one person is involved in the treatment. It's the occupational therapist, the nurses, the social worker, the doctors, and so on. Which is very different from what goes on in, so say, local authority social work, childcare, and so on. And this sharing and acceptance that everybody has a part to play in this is a very real discipline.
Actually, if I can just interrupt, I mean, one of the things they're just having to discover for the first time is that they thought it was like, it's not actually like that, is it? I mean, the Maria Colwell business and so on showed them that they were actually part of a wider team that were supposed to be working together.
Yes,
well, they didn't realise it.
No.
That's right.
Well, that's discipline. Why case conferences and discussions are so important.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I don't know whether this is. I mean, this may have no bearing on your tape. But when I was last year in Oxfordshire after I retired, I used to teach Alison Murphy's student at the Oxford Poly, who you know about. And the Whitney local authority, that was the area office, was pretty well staffed with most of our old students.
Yes.
And they wanted me to have seminars, casework seminars with them. And I did. Once a fortnight, and then the other areas got a bit jealous, and this had to officially stop. In other words, the county council, the authority, weren't going to pay me. So I said, all right, I was quite willing to come out. Oh, then they want to club together and pay me themselves, and I had to explain to them this wasn't on, because once they did that, their relationship, my relationship, become a very different matter. It may be good or bad, but it would be different. And I stuck to that, but I said I'd like to come out once a month, because don't forget, you teach me as well as I teach you. And that's how it was, and I used to go out there, but I'd made up my mind by this time what I must do is to help, I didn't want to go on with this, to help them run these things themselves. And one of the nice things, I was talking about mental nursing at one time, and one looks back now, what odd good things did one do? Well, there weren't many. But one of the nice things was that Whitney went and did do this, and they still have these seminars, which they organise and run themselves.
Yes.
Which is what, you know, I'd hoped would happen, and it did happen. But there's so little of that. I don't know whether you meet it or not. I don't.
No.
Also, talking about the mental health course and singing its praises, you see, where else in England or in the British Isles, as it's called, would you have people like Donald Winnicott lecturing to students? And that Mrs. whatever her name was at the head of the Betsy Bannister, yes. And people,
Miss Gardner.
Yes, well, yes, she finally. Amy took over from her, actually, you probably know, yes. But I mean, there were some really outstanding people
involved in that.
And Gaynor comes back to London, I know.
Dr. Crabble Taylor, will you allow him?
Well, yes, I would, yes, on academic psychiatry, yes. Yes. Yes.
I just wondered.
Yes, oh, yes, oh, yes, oh, yes. I wouldn't. Unlike some of my colleagues, they got rid of him eventually.
A terrible cynic.
Oh yes, I know he was. But then he was, after all, that told you as much about him as about anything else. And I never forget, see, we got to know him, Margaret and I, but he used to come to a party sometimes, and we went out to his house once or twice, and I remember his wife always wore white gloves when she served the meal, white chamois gloves.
Yes.
I don't know why. But I remember once when he was a bit unbuttoned, he gave me a very graphic description of what it was like being arrested by the Gestapo and treated. And of course he was a German doctor, and in his tradition you were looked up to, you know, you were somebody.
Yes.
And he was being treated in this way by the Gestapo. And I think that left a mark on him.
Yes.
And of course when he came here he had to do medicine over here to become qualified again.
Yes.
And you put all those things together, I think it explained quite a lot.
Yes.
he couldn't really bear to think that social workers could do anything, I think. That was why he was so negativistic. But if you saw him as a teacher of academic psychiatry, he was very good.
I remember we were impressed. He did, again, it was one of those clinical demonstrations on Thursdays at Maudsley.
Yes.
And he brought in a 17-year-old boy who was feeling depressed and suicidal.
Yeah.
And you saw a quite different side of I think the one and only time I actually saw compassion and a great feeling of it was more than just empathy with this lad. I mean, he was really he was obviously moved by the boy. You
know? Yes. Oh yes, because you had to, you sometimes see one side of him, occasionally you might see the other. Yes.
Yes, we all came to impress.
Yes, but his job was to teach psychiatry, whatever that means. I never discovered what teaching psychiatry is, but I do know you can go to lectures and read textbooks, but I still think you have to live with patients.
Mm.
And I remember when Anthony Storr, who did his early days at Runball, before he came to the Maudsley, and therefore he knew I'd been at Runball. What stories he heard, I don't know, but he knew that. And I remember Andrew saying, you know, I do envy your experience there. And I said, what are you talking about? And what he was talking about was living with schizophrenics, which is a very different thing from seeing them once a week or once a day for an hour, and living with them. I have a feeling if Margaret hadn't turned up, I'd have got schizophrenic myself by that time. But they were war conditioned, you know. One was short, no trained staff, and one was up half the night with air raids, one and the other. You know, life was very, very difficult. But, yes, and when, again, see, I was talking earlier about mental hospitals and what goes on now. And PSWs have told me that they knew perfectly what was going on in the hospital. They didn't.
Mm.
The only people who knew were the nurses.
Yes. Well, I mean, it's
what
Muddy Bree was saying to me.
Almost the same, was
he? Very similar things.
Yes.
And similar things you've been saying about the child guidance PSWs.
Yes.
Not really understanding the predicament of the hospital PSWs.
Yes. And the thing that there's a relationship here, because one thing I've always tried to, in the old days when I was working with students, was try to get across to them was that a job isn't made for you. You've got to make your own job. It's no good saying that I'm not, the psychiatrist doesn't recognise me, or the hospital doesn't recognise me. They won't unless you do. And no one knew better than Molly Bree. You know?
Yes.
That you had to create a position for yourself.
Yes.
Johnny Hardwick, and of course it was much more difficult in a mental hospital where there may be one PSW with a very large hospital.
Yes.
With psychiatrists who were rather used to, in that setting, giving orders or telling people what to do. And I remember coming back to old Mary Lane. I remember some young, rather upstart for a registrar at the Maudsley saying to Mary, well, you needn't bother about this case, Miss Lane. There's no social work there. And she said, oh, and how do you know? Well, it was just necessary to say that sometimes. Yes, like you were saying about Betty Irving in a different context, yes.
When Molly Bree was talking about this, she was actually able to pinpoint the incident when she thinks that she made the breakthrough in the hospital. I mean, she actually described something that happened on a ward that some nurses witnessed.
Yes.
And where she made the breakthrough on that ward and the whole story got round the hospital, and she said somehow things seemed to change very nicely.
Yes.
And I wonder whether anything you can pinpoint anything similar that happened to you where you suddenly... I suppose it's slightly different for you because you were asked to go to the Maudsley straight from the course. You were already... You didn't have to carve out a position for yourself.
But there was one thing when I was a nurse, I think I touched on, when I was at Campbell House, and the kind of staff they used to employ, you know, ex-army people.
Yes.
When the doctors realised that things could be handled differently. By young people who were much more sensitive and aware of what was going on.
Yes.
So that, in a way, these kind of nice things do happen.
Yes.
Though often one only remembers the ones that happened.
Yes.
And, what the sort of peer Molly B was talking about, it meant PSW might have to work hard for some years to really get herself established. And the only way you could get established was to demonstrate what you could do. There was no other way.
Was the mental health course, was it sort of like encapsulated in that Department of Social Admin at LSE?
Yes, it was in the Social Science Social Admin Department.
I mean, it was encapsulated. I mean, in the sense that it wasn't part of any or didn't have any links or connections with anything else that was going on in that
LSE
in that department. Did it?
No.
It?
Well, when you were a student, I mean, the people like Donaldson and Brian Abel Smith, you never came in contact with them.
No.
Or Tippett.
No,
they were separate. Yes. They were involved in the 2-year social science students,
yes.
Of course.
Yes.
Well, then the. Previously, of course, there had been a small child care course there before.
Claire Minicott's course.
Yes, that was earlier on.
Yes. was that actually really, though, another extension of another mental health course? I mean,
no, it wasn't. No.
PSW
they were
trained.
There's another thing interesting about PSW. They were really responsible for all impact training. Wherever you looked around, you found them in universities and courses and so on.
Yes.
And yes, you see, they never managed to get the key administrative posts in the new Seabone set up. Because, as far as I understand, I got most of this from Elizabeth Hull, because I have no knowledge of local authority.
Yeah.
At least I haven't, because I don't want to have, I suppose. Local authority committees, they're much more inclined to appoint a man in administrative post, because that's what they used to. And when they were faced with someone who got to be an administrator, they quite understandably, from their point of view, chose people who had been charged, health and welfare administrators, who hadn't got a social work training, although they were supposed to have had. But you know that it didn't and you know what's happened. Very few of the directors of social work departments seem to me to have been social workers in any sense of the word. I don't know whether that's so, but that's my impression. Is that how it is?
Well, I mean, I don't know.
I know Chops is like that.
But I mean,
And Oxford is like that.
Yes. I wonder whether one of the reasons was because the PSWs who were working in the local authority were in health, in mental health service, which was like a subsection of the health department.
Yes.
And had no senior administrative experience or opportunity.
No, this is of course one of the problems. Very few had any administrative experience. And I must say what knowledge I have of PSWs, they're not good administrators by and large. I mean, Mary Lane and Margaret Eden, they were rather exceptional people.
Yes.
But no, I didn't think they were. And they certainly had no experience of administering a local authority. I don't know how, I never discovered how Elsie Thomas got on. Knowing Elsie, she must have fought tooth and nail with everybody because she, you know, she was a person who would. Which brings me back to one of the things got home to me when I was a student. I think it was Hunter, psychiatrist at the Tavistock, who said, you know, I've long come to the conclusion that to be a good social worker, you need to be a bit paranoid. And it took me a long time to grasp what he meant. I see now what he meant.
Yeah.
You can see how I was talking about Elsie Thomas and that kind of Molly B. I think you have to be.
Yeah, in the sense of, can you say more about that?
You have to feel a bit persecuted.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, yes.
Does that make sense to you?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
It does make sense, does it?
Yeah, I'm smiling because I was thinking of the number of Jews that have gone into social work and psychiatric social work.
Yes.
And linking that with a kind of comment in that last Woody Allen, I don't know if you know Woody Allen film called Manhattan.
No.
He makes some comment about Jewish liberal paranoia.
Mm.
Or the Jewish liberal paranoia syndrome is one of his remarks.
Yes, yes.
It was when we were at the film, yeah, my wife sort of went into kinks over that. Because she thinks
yes.
So my problem.
I see, yes.
Mm. Yes, you got to be a bit... Well...
Is your wife not Jewish?
No, she's not, no.
Uh-huh.
Good Plymouth Brethren stock.
Good God, that's a funny combination.
Yeah.
Is she still a practicing Brethren?
No, of course not. No, oh. But that was her background.
Well, I must say, I like to know what your children are like. That combination. But of course, many of these old Jewish POWs were refugees, as you know.
Yes.
And so that they... The outlets for them were somewhat limited, I think.
Yes.
See, some of them started at Darkington School.
Mm.
Amy was there, and, yes. And Annalisa Walker. And I think Ilse was there.
Did she was at Darkington?
I think so, yes. Yes. I know some of them were.
Yes.
Teaching, I think, doing something.
Yes.
You know, Darkington being the kind of progressive school it was,
yes.
It... you know, it sort of took them in and
yes.
So on. And I think the mental health course, and of course many of them, as you know, became lay analysts as well.
Yes.
You know, they went on from social work. In fact, at one time I remember looking around and thinking, well, I haven't got a student left who's in social work. It wasn't quite like that, but that's what I thought it was. So many of them got attracted into them. Amy is rather exceptional. She remained a social worker as well as training in psychoanalysis.
Yes. I mean, she now is an analyst.
Yes, she's now been accepted. Yes,
yes.
Yes. She had some great triumphs over that.
Yes.
She's a rare person, Amy.
Very,
see? She's a rare person.
Yes.
I remember saying to Ada's analyst, who's Thomas, who's I used to teach at Anna Freud's set-up, knew Amy very well, of course, and I said to Ruth one day, I don't know, if it wasn't for Amy, I think Amy keeps me sane at LSE. Oh, she said, that's what Amy says about you. Well, where do we go from there? From here?
Well, I'm interested in what you were talking about when you were a student at LSE. Can you remember anything about the sort of things you discussed in seminars at that point? What were the arguments about? And I wonder how, or you know, seminar discussions. But I mean, what were the issues that students discussed? And so and I wonder how it all sounded to you, coming with your particular background, because you'd already got a rich background working in the mental health field.
Do you know, come to think of it, I can't really recall LSE seminars. I certainly recall vividly seminars with Bowlby at Tavistock.
Mm. Was that where you did your practical training?
Yes, in those days, the Tavistock used to take mental health course students.
Oh, I see, yes.
And that's why I had Harry Bunner as my supervisor.
Yes. I see, yes.
And had cases with Bowlby. And his pet theme then was that aggression was the response to frustration.
Mm.
I remember there used to be a whole lot of seminars on this.
Mm.
Then Winnicott read a paper, which I've still got, it is writing somewhere, on enuresis. Enuresis is a communication.
Mm.
between the parent and the child and the parent. Mm-hmm. And it was those sort of seminar papers and seminars that I remember. I really can't think. Actually, Betty Joseph. Oh, yes, she did, yes. Betty, she became a famous Kleinian analyst. You know the name, I'm sure.
Yes, I've heard the name.
Yes. She did a lot of translation, I think, of Klein's work into English. Betty, she was a Manchester Jewish family she came from, but yes, the seminars then were really, they were classes, they weren't seminars, they were about quite practical problems in the field of psychiatric social work.
Yes.
I don't mean that in a derogatory sense, you know, the, for instance, how the Mental Health Act in those days worked,
yes,
which was before 59, you remember going back before, it was the old days, of the relieving officer, hence your rate-aided patient.
Yes. Right.
Yes. And the observation wards in the London, what were then, of course, LCC hospitals in London. yes, and there were, there used to be someone, I don't know who it was now, who really talked about, he lectured about the history of sanitary arrangements and water arrangements in this country. And I remember there was, who that well was, I don't know.
What, a lecturer in local government, was it?
No, he wasn't, ordinarily he was a professor in the university.
Really?
Yes, but I mean Chadwick was just a name to me, but Chadwick became a very real person at the time this chap had finished, you know, and I wasn't belittling any of that, but I really find related to what went on in classes, and there was a connection here between how psychiatry had, yes, of course there was a link here. It doesn't sound as, it's not as daft as it sounds. You see, before the, I still think, and thought then, and I think now, that the 1930 Act was a landmark of which 1959, much more important than 59, because it brought into being the Voluntary Patient Act. Mm. And you see, this has an enormous bearing on the development of psychiatric social work. Because before that, you could only get into mental hospital if you were certified. also, people in the community knew of their neighbours and friends and relatives who went into hospital and came out, which is more than you could have said one time. Although, I mean, there were some hospitals, I could name at least one or two, where the nursing staff objected so much to voluntary patients that they made life such that the voluntary patients left. Brentwood, there's no secret about that, Brentwood was one.
Yeah.
And, but apart from these sort of backward places, this was an enormous step forward because at the same time, although it was wasn't mandatory, I mean, people like Swam Olsen at Rumbaugh, people, the psychiatrists, that kind of modern outlook, they started outpatient clinics. So that you had the development of the outpatient psychiatric outpatient clinics, which at the same time brought into being the work for social psychiatric social worker.
Yes.
So that you see these things, and if I'm talking about the way our modern sanitary arrangements work, there is a connection, if you see what I mean. So it's not as daft as it sounds. But I've forgotten the importance of that act, 1930 Act. You see, because without that act, then there couldn't have been any PSWs anyway. Although, you know, a small group went out and trained under the Columbia, I think it was, Grant, wasn't it, in America?
Yes, the Commonwealth.
Yes, I mean, Honey was one, I know.
Yes.
Yes, that old lady you saw down in Dorset, another one, wasn't she? Clemma Brown.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, actually, no, you know, I'd always thought that. No, she wasn't. She antedated then.
Oh, did she?
Her own steam to the New York School of Social Work.
So she did, yes. That's right, yes. She had more money than some of them. Yes, yes. Yes, yes. That's quite true. She did. Yes, that's quite true.
You told me about crossing swords with Gordon Hamilton. Yes, yes.
Ah, yes, yes. Oh, yes. Well, of course, again, as you know from your own knowledge and experience now, that the philosophy of social work in America is different from our kind of philosophy.
Yes.
And this is a mistake that was made so often when people wanted to import the whole idea of American casework into this country had overlooked the fact that there's a philosophy behind social work.
Well, actually, I wanted to ask you about that, actually, because all the time we've been talking, for the most part, you know, about social work ideas, we've been talking about psychiatric social workers perfecting their their techniques really of helping people.
Techniques was a dirty word, I might tell you, but still, don't mind.
Yeah. Well, let's hang on to that.
Yes. I prefer the word skilled, but
okay,
like
perfecting their skills. Yeah. Yes. Okay. I'll go along with that.
Yeah.
But we haven't talked very much about the context in which the skills are used, particularly. The social policy context, or if you like, I mean, I think in social work, when you translate social policy into a social work terms, you're talking about agency function, the purpose for which the employing organisation exists.
Yeah.
And then the social work, and then it has to find, it has to employ a social worker who has the skills to carry out the mandate of the agency and interpret the agency's mandate back to it in terms of what the social worker finds.
Mm.
We haven't talked very much about that, and you know, and when we've been talking about your contribution and your thoughts, you know, a lot of it seems to have been about perfecting skills, but I mean, it's,
yeah.
I mean, but you must also have been thinking about these other things, because well, very early on when we were talking, it can be clear, you know, you're also you know, a strongly political animal as well, which is also about, you must have had views about more about beverage and what sort of about the welfare state. I mean, you were doing your training at the time of all that post-war welfare legislation, the new Child Care Act, the new Child Care courses. And I mean, you must have had a lot of thoughts about that as well.
It was an extraordinary period. I remember Margaret was writing her book, and we were both at Guy's, York Clinic, Guy's Hospital. When the German collapse came, and there was a general election, and we didn't know the result until a month after the election, because we were waiting for the service vote.
Yes.
So that when they were announced on the wireless, it was in the morning. It wasn't like waiting for this result and that result, because they were all there.
Mm.
They came one after the other. And you could tell from various people in Guy's Hospital whose side they were on by their face.
Really? Yes.
Yes. And I'm Margaret made a note of that. We did really feel then this was the beginning of a new social order. And when the Attlee government put it into effect, and by that time we all read Beveridge at that point, I might tell you, before the Attlee government was formed. He was a nasty old man, Beveridge, but still, that's by the way. We really did feel that this was something very, very important and quite revolutionary. The Royal Commission, the Curtis Report, was another revolutionary period, alongside with the social legislation, like National Health Service, and other social legislation going on in the House of Commons. And you felt this was really what a new world then. You felt buoyed up by it. And when I did mental health course, mustn't overlook the fact that Lasky was still functioning. And I'd been a rebel, as you probably put two and two together. I'd been a rebel most of my life, so it appealed to me. in sort of parentheses, when I was 19, I think I must have been about 19, is when the MacDonald and Thomas and Snowden formed this famous coalition government with the Tories.
Yes.
And the Labour Party under Arthur Henderson went there in Mexico, about 61 seats, I think. Anyway, Labour only got about 61 seats then.
Yes.
But I canvassed, I was just about 19, for George Strauss in Vauxhall, what was then Vauxhall, I think. And he lost his seat to a Liberal, a man called Bryan. And it's nothing to do with social work, I might say. After the election, George asked all the people who helped him voluntary to dinner. Well, one of the people I knew who'd been working with him was one of the masters from Westminster School. And I tell you how things were then, because at the end of the election, the actual day, polling day, we were worn out. We'd been given. George went to give us dinner at a sort of pub cum restaurant in Westminster Beach, where he normally went. And the manager stopped him at the door and said, look, you know, we're great friends, but if you come in tonight, there'll be a riot. Because, you know, that's how strong things were. So we didn't go in. But I, in all innocence, I hadn't been in London, I didn't think much more than a year, I suppose. I went to this address and then discovered I was in Millionaires Row, in a house with a double staircase where Mrs. Strauss, they were millionaires, I didn't know they were. And Herbert Morrison was at dinner that night, and he lost his seat in Hackney, or was he? I think it was Hackney, one of the Hackney divisions. And I was very idealistic that age, and I was taught a lesson that night, because people I heard most, but all they talked about was the way they get their seats.